Hey there, my DPC Story listeners. Marielle here. I'm thrilled to invite you to a game-changing event I'm hosting featuring Dr. Lauren Hetty. For the past decade, Dr. Lauren Hetty has been pioneering in direct primary care with her practice, Direct Doctors. She's kept her overhead to a mere 20% with zero staff, and now she's ready to share more of her strategies with you. That's right, folks. Dr. Hetty's practice has been booming, with four physicians joining her at her two locations. If you've ever wondered how to keep overhead low, streamline workflows without staff, and experience exponential growth, then this event is an absolute must. And here's the best part. Tickets are pay what you can. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to learn from one of the best in the biz. Reserve your spot now for our virtual Ask the Expert with Dr. Hetty, which will happen on April 30th. Get tickets on the events tab at mydpcstory.com and get ready to elevate your practice to new heights.
Direct primary care is an innovative, alternative path to insurance-driven healthcare. Typically, patients pay their doctor a low monthly membership and, in return, build a lasting relationship with their doctor and have their doctor available at their fingertips.
Direct primary care is a platform that allows the practice of medicine in the way I always envisioned it, developing long-lasting and interactive relationships as the basis for an individualized, holistic care. I'm Dr. Linnea Meyer, and this is my DPC story.
Dr. Meyer was raised near Chicago, where her family maintained a small farm, from which she learned to appreciate organic whole foods, the cycles of nature, and the wonders of the outdoors. She earned her BA degree in psychology from Earlham College in Indiana, a Quaker-based school that fostered her belief in treating others as equals, a commitment to social justice, and her desire to serve. After spending some years in the workforce, traveling and pursuing passions in Chinese martial arts and medicine, she graduated from UMass Medical School and completed her training at Lawrence Family Medicine Residency in Massachusetts. She opened her DPC doors in 2015.
It's so exciting to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. This is very exciting.
I wanted to start our conversation with a quote that I pulled from your presentation with Aaron George last November at Nuts and Bolts. You said a quote which I loved, "Design a practice as you envision it." And you have clearly achieved this as patients have followed you wherever you have ended up practicing. So I wanted to ask, what was your process when you created Wellscape Direct MD?
That's a great question. So I went into medical school a little bit later on. So I was already pretty clear that I wanted to be kind of a generalist and have a holistic perspective. And part of that comes from training in martial arts and learning some about Chinese medicine and understanding a little bit more about that different type of medicine, different practice style. So I think that's really kind of where the foundation came from, just knowing pretty clearly that I had an image of what I envisioned medical practice to be. And I think many people have that. And you go into medical school, you're all enthusiastic and you'll get all this knowledge and, you know, you get all these skills and you start treating patients. And then, you know, we get out and we hit the real world, right? And so, and there have been so many changes in the practice of medicine in the last, you know, decade plus. And so, like so many others, I think I just got tired of dealing with kind of corporate medicine, the insurance companies kind of controlling and managing everything. And not having enough time with patients, not being able to develop those deeper relationships where you really get to know them. I always sort of did, even within the constraints of those structures. But as so many know that it means you're always running behind. You're always doing your paperwork late into the, you know, hours of the evening. And so when I finally had gotten kind of fed up with that and left and didn't really know what I was going to do, a patient, actually a former patient of mine, told me about direct primary care and said, this is something you ought to look into. I think it would really fit how you practice. It sounds like, you know, it could be the future of medicine. And I did. And, you know, that's how I kind of got into it. And I think it just provided this platform so that I could live out that image of practicing medicine that I went into medical school with.
Over the past 5 years, you have maintained a thriving practice as a solo DPC doctor and as a female in the middle of Boston. Looking back at the last 5 years, can you give a reflection about your time that you've spent away from corporate medicine in your own DPC?
Yeah, sure. It has been quite the journey. Sometimes I look back and I just can't even believe I did it. And I think, it was just that you get pushed to a certain point and you can't take the corporate medicine. You can't take the, you know, all the boxes you have to check off for the insurance companies. And I certainly had gotten to that point and I had left clinical medicine, not sure what I was going to do until I, you know, came across direct primary care. And, you know, I went to a couple of AAFP conferences as they had come out in support of the model. And, you know, you feel the enthusiasm and I just did it. I think if I had taken too long to like look at it closely or, you know, kind of realize what I was getting into, you know, I might've had more hesitation, but I didn't. And I am really glad. I think hands down, there's no better patient experience that I have had while I've been in medicine. And it's certainly a learning experience. You know, you constantly have to learn and adjust and change and figure out new ways of doing things. I had no concept about business. I mean, some, but, you know, relatively speaking, I had to learn a lot about how to run a business. So that's always a challenge for me. I certainly learned that I need to have certain people who help me out with certain aspects that I didn't, you know, want to invest the time in to learn. I had a lot of support, family, friends, you know, and these other people who I brought in, you know, tax accountant, that kind of thing. So honestly, it's really just flown by. I look back, I can't believe I'm actually going to be coming up. I'm starting my sixth year. And I just feel fortunate. I feel fortunate that patients, you know, took the risk and, you know, found value in what I offer, kind of came on the journey with me. And it's been a slow growth for me, which is kind of how I designed it, because I didn't want to get too overwhelmed with too many patients quickly, since I was just a solo practitioner. So it's been good. It's sometimes very challenging. Sometimes, you know, you want to pull your hair out and say, what have I done? But overall, when I look back, and especially when I compare that with my previous experiences in various settings, you know, it's been such a great experience.
That's so wonderful to hear and so inspiring. When you mentioned the idea about the fact that you're glad you didn't wait too much longer than you did, you know, I can absolutely relate to that. And I'm sure a lot of listeners can, given that we go into training in this RVU driven model. Like, we don't typically train in a direct primary care or direct care model. And so I could easily see how someone who could be on the fence, but so used to the RVU world, the insurance driven world, could take a step back in terms of, you know, the possible safety net of the golden handcuffs. With regards to your demographics, your choice to build your practice slowly or slower than some people who may have opened with 300 patients, can you tell us a little bit about your demographics?
I have an amazingly, you know, wide range of folks. You know, I thought maybe I would get kind of all, you know, women of a certain age or, you know, something like that. But it's kind of been amazing that, you know, so I see people starting age 18 and up. And so I would say I have folks all the way from 18 up to, I think, in their 70s is my oldest patient. And it's pretty well spread out. I would say probably my vast majority are in the age range of 30 to 50, 60s. I have a pretty even distribution of men and women. I have, you know, a pretty remarkable distribution of, I guess, socioeconomic levels. You know, folks who are on disability and have, you know, multiple medical issues that don't allow them to be able to work, you know, all the way to those who, you know, have a, you know, reasonable income and just want the convenience of the what the direct primary care offers. So it's really been pretty remarkable. I also I'm right in the city, so there's a lot of good access to me by, you know, subway and bus. At least there was before COVID, but we're getting back into it. But you know, so I do have a whole lot of folks who live right in the city and are, you know, come to my practice because it's convenient. But I also have folks who are quite a ways out, you know, in the surrounding areas of Boston and even further. Because again, what direct primary care offers is not only the in-office visits, but also all that virtual communication. So the most common way that people, you know, communicate with me is through the secure text messaging app. And then obviously since COVID came along, we've been doing even more video appointments than I had before, which again was another great thing about direct primary care, that we already had the all the equipment and the technology to be able to continue just to do virtual work that we had already been doing. It wasn't like we had to scramble to figure out how to do this, like so many traditional practices that weren't getting reimbursed for their, you know, video calls or phone calls. So it's really been eye-opening in that sense, just to see kind of the breadth of different patients who have signed on.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Your calls for more content have not fallen on deaf ears. I am so excited to announce the My DPC Story Patreon community. Delve into exclusive full-length interviews with pioneers like Dr. Neeti Kapoor, our inaugural physician guest, and get further enlightening insights from our current season's doctors, starting with Dr. Harpreet Sui. Hear our guests share even more, from their worst days to their best days and everything in between. Get access to this treasure trove of conversations and more by joining our My DPC Story community now. Check out the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan. That's patreon.com/mydpcstoryfan. Linnea, when you opened as a solo practitioner and continued on as a solo practitioner, just to make sure, no other staff, correct?
That's correct.
Can you share with us how that's working for you, especially when it comes to being a female solo practitioner and safety, chaperones?
Yeah, so the way my practice is, so first of all, I sublet an office space from a PT group. So there are typically other people around. And my office is kind of in the back of the space. I know the owner of the PT space well, but they're kind of doing their thing, and my office is in a corner. So there is some element of safety just because there's other people around. Of course, things, again, have changed a little bit since COVID. They've pared way back, but they're still there. And then otherwise, I make sure I tell patients, you know, I tell them I have no other staff. It's just going to be me. You know, if we need to do something, it will just be me. If there's any like discomfort with that, then we can figure something out. I've never had anyone who has had an issue with it or who, you know, requested that they want a chaperone. And I mean, that's been kind of throughout my career. Whenever you ask someone, often they will say, no, I'm fine. I'd rather just, you know, it be you. You know, and should that arise, you know, we'll figure it out, whether I bring somebody in or, you know, we do a virtual chaperone, you know, we can figure that out. So far it's been fine, you know, because I think I'm just upfront and transparent to people about what they're signing up for. And in fact, most of them really like it because they know there's not going to be that other level or two levels before they can get to me. Like in so many traditional practices where you have to, you know, call and you get the receptionist and they have to send it to the nurse and they have to send it to the PA, you know, before you even, and often you don't even get to talk to your doctor. So it hasn't really, that part hasn't really been much of an issue being a solo practitioner.
That's so true what you mentioned with regards to the multiple layers of care that a patient has to go through. The fact that you know your patients and you know if you are feeling uncomfortable, that you're able to adjust because there's no bureaucratic layers.
You just start realizing when you go into direct primary care too. And I mean, I'm sure people realize it before then too, but is how many opportunities you're missing to have that connection with patients. You know, when something goes wrong, to know about it and not just have, you know, another staff member take care of it. And then you find out only 6 months later when the patient shows up in the office and has an appointment with you. You know, meanwhile, they've had, you know, blood pressure changes or been to the ER or, you know, all these other things that you had no awareness of. Whereas with direct primary care and you know, you're on top of all that. So you know when things have happened and how to follow up and what impact that might have on their life or their family and, you know, all those kinds of things. So it really is, you know, I think the traditional model as it has, or at least what it has turned into now with all these other layers and this kind of protecting, you know, the doctor from, you know, all these little things, I think is just, again, such a missed opportunity to deepen relationships with your patients and get to know them better so that you can provide better care going forward. So maybe next time you can help them not to have to go to the emergency room, right? You know, if they're coming to you in advance of something that perhaps could have been warded off. So I think that's just, again, just the beauty of the direct primary care model.
I recently just had a patient who was thinking that it was appropriate to stop a medication, and a message was left with the service, but I didn't get it until, you know, days later. And this medication was not a safe medicine to stop. And so I think that every single person who practices medicine in the traditional insurance model can absolutely relate to that, because as doctors, we are so focused on providing the care and we don't have any clue in a lot of cases, who's even calling our office.
Yeah.
You're so out of touch. When you are using an application to communicate with patients, how does that look like for your patients?
I chose to use Spruce and I use their secure text messaging app. And I have found that that's been great. Most patients like to do text messaging. I like the fact that it is secure. And it's easy to use. You know, you can open it with a thumbprint or fingerprints, you know, so it's, people seem to like it. And it comes over, you know, as text. They have the opportunity to attach photos or to take photos or videos. You can attach documents. You know, I can attach their lab results there and send it to them along with an explanation. So it's been really, I think that's just been outstanding in terms of opening that direct communication. I find that like trying to use a portal Even though my EHR has one, again, like I don't get notifications when someone's writing into the portal. It's not that kind of direct text messaging experience that we've all become very comfortable with and kind of rely on these days, you know, even outside of the medical world, or even more so outside of the medical world. Medical world has kind of been behind the times on that. So that's worked out well. But I mean, I think the biggest thing from my perspective is shutting it off, not responding to those texts, you know, and really being diligent about either shutting off the notifications or just saying, this is my downtime, I'm not going to respond. And I think many drug primary care practices or physicians will talk about that. So, you know, I'm better at sometimes than others. I certainly have had patients who have been having urgent things. And so, you know, for that reason, I will be more attentive at certain periods. But I do tell my patients that if you are having any kind of an emergency, don't rely on the text messaging. Like, you need to call me. And that is whether it's during the day, because I may be in with other patients, or whether it's in the evenings or on the weekends. So that's kind of the protocol that I use. I have had some patients ask about the portal and get signed up for it, but no one has ever used it. Kind of once they get connected to the direct text messaging, they seem to like that better. That being said, I also have a few folks who aren't that technological and prefer just good old email or SMS texting. And I just make sure they understand that I do offer the secure option and that those forms are not secure for me. So that's kind of their decision. And some people just don't, you know, they're fine with it and they just rather email, which is fine.
That's really important for people to hear, though, because, you know, in my area, I live in, well, currently my population is around 54-56% yeah. Medicare age population. And there's some people who yeah. they don't have a smartphone and yet they do have email. So that's wonderful that, you know, you have that as an option and you're very transparent still, even when it comes to communication about, hey, you can do this. It might not be the most secure, but I will still get it, which is invaluable.
I do tell folks, even if they're not even comfortable with that, you know, you pick up the phone and call, you know, that still works.
I want to ask about the layout of your clinic, because everybody, like we've talked about, has their own way of doing DPC. And if you've seen one DPC, you've seen one DPC.
Unfortunately, here the recording gets cut off, but Dr. Meyer continues on with her story, describing her 240 square foot office space.
Stay with us. We'll be right back. Thank you to Spruce Health for supporting the My DPC Story podcast. The ways we communicate have changed dramatically over the past decades, but technology and tools in healthcare have not kept pace. Patients want more access and digital convenience, as well as the ability to text their care teams. Care teams are inundated with more communication and rising expectations, but are still using tools and technology stuck in prior decades. Spruce Health created a solution for the tech-forward DPC practice by creating a communication product designed to serve both the patient and the doctor through intuitive HIPAA-compliant workflows, tagging, scheduled messages, and triage templates ready for use, whether you're on your phone or in the exam room. New users get 20% off for the first 12 months of a paid plan with code MARYAL20. That's MARYAL20. So check out Spruce Health today at sprucehealth.com or check out the link in the show notes.
So that's kind of where everything happens. Okay. It's my desk. There's a chair, kind of whatever, you know, I have a few books, you know, kind of all my, I don't know, paper materials kind of behind my desk. And then, so the office is a little bit like an L shape. And so in the other part of the room, so I have a curtain that goes across where they are behind, where the exam table is. And, you know, so that offers some privacy. And that's kind of where, you know, any examination would happen. But most people, when they come in the office, are sitting right in the chair now 6 feet apart from me. So it is pushed back right where the exam table is. But typically, you know, they'd be kind of in the front part of the office, and then we'd move, you know, to the back part when an exam is needed. So that's my office, but so that doesn't include like the bathroom. So there's two shared bathrooms that I have with the PT group. And then I also have, you know, access to their little kitchenette. And then there is a front like waiting area where PT folks usually wait. Again, my patients usually don't wait for me, classic direct primary care. So there's usually not too much need for that part of the layout.
I always love when I hear doctors talking about the waiting room that isn't actually for waiting. Right. It's
gonna say the other thing that's been super nice about subletting from a PT group, especially one that I know, has just been that it's so active. You know what I mean? People walk in and usually there's, you know, somebody there working out, doing something. You know, the owner of the PT group is very energetic and he's like usually running across the room or something. And I love that sense of energy. And I also love that kind of emphasis, even though it's not my, you know, my business, but just to have that around and kind of, you know, to emphasize the importance of exercise, which is a, you know, big component of what I do try and emphasize in my practice as part of just kind of wellness and, you know, healthy lifestyle.
That said, with you being a solo practitioner, can you talk about how you are able to do self-care while managing your practice by yourself?
I can talk about that. And it's always a challenge, just I think for everybody. Especially these days, you know, we've had a lot of added stress in the last 6 months with COVID, family stuff, you know, and then on top of just the standard running the business and taking care of patients' regular health issues. So it's been particularly challenging. I do try and consolidate days that I'm in the office consolidate appointments so that I'm only in the office on certain days. For me, I've kind of finally settled on a schedule where usually Mondays I just leave all for virtual work, because usually everyone's, you know, writing in stuff that they, you know, needed over the weekend. And it's just kind of that Monday morning, you know, disaster that we all know that you're just trying to play catch up. And it also allows me to, you know, if someone's having an acute issue, and then we can kind of plan out the week's appointments as well. And then usually Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I'm in the office. And Thursday, I try and save is more my catch up day. Now, you know, as we all know, anything at any time can happen that kind of blows that all out of the water, depending on what's going on with your patients. But that's my general concept. And I've been trying to be good about just, you know, taking, again, shutting off notifications, at a certain time in the evening so that, you know, I have that kind of downtime. It is a lot to balance, you know, and then you're still having to juggle that, all the clinical stuff, with all the business stuff, right? So, so that's a whole nother added layer that you just have to find a space to do that in. And you just do, you know, you just do because you have to, whether it's, you know, getting things ready for taxes or, registrations of your business, renewals, that kind of stuff. And then, of course, all your CME stuff you still have to juggle. So it is a lot. You have such flexibility. My days are so different now compared to back again when I was, you know, employed, that you were on their schedule and, you know, seeing however many patients that they insisted you see. And this way, it's like you gear it towards what your patients' needs are, and then you can juggle things around the rest of your life. So if I want to exercise, you know, midday, if I want to go for a walk, you know, sometimes, you know, you can do that. You can fit that in. Having my own appointments for whatever, you know, upcoming root canal or whatever, you know, you can fit that into your schedule so much easier than kind of in the old days. So there's, there's a lot of demand and a lot of different directions, but there's also just so much more flexibility. And also, you know, patients get to know us, which is also the kind of neat thing about this. And they are usually so understanding, like, oh, you have a root canal, no problem. You know, you take care of that and I'll talk to you tomorrow, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's super nice in that regard.
In instances where you've had to take time for yourself, especially a longer block of time, like a vacation,
how did you handle coverage for your practice?
I handle it in a couple of ways. So I let patients know well in advance. I try and give them, you know, several weeks to know that this is the time that I'm going to be away. And, you know, please send in refills, please check your meds, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I have plenty of availability before and after, which I always do. But I'm going to, you know, take this time off and won't be responding. That being said, sometimes still emergencies happen. And so far, I still have been the one to handle it because I've always had Wi-Fi or, you know, a phone access wherever I've gone on vacation. I do have some colleagues in the area, and we do, like, I do provide them their that number in case they can't reach me. So they do have a backup that they can, you know, talk to one of my colleagues if they can't reach me. And I also give them the names of some urgent cares that I know, so that they have always some place to call. And of course I say, you know, if none of these are working out or you need an emergency room, go to the emergency room or call an emergency room. So there's always, you know, several layers of backup in case they can't reach me or the next layer. So that's how I've been doing it so far. I have been warning people that at some point I do hope to, you know, totally shut down and have like maybe an overseas trip once we can travel again and all that kind of stuff. In which case then I will rely on my colleagues much more to really take over, you know, to be truly on call. But so far it's been okay. And patients, again, are generally very respectful and understand. And even if they forget, they, you know, the nice thing about the Spruce text messaging is it can have an auto responder message go out. So you can say, you know, as you may remember from my email, I am out on this day to this day, you know, please call if it's an emergency. And that has been a super feature that I have found of Spruce. And I even use it on the weekends as well. It's the weekend, you know, I'll get back to you on Monday unless it's an emergency. So that's been working out pretty well.
And with you sharing that, hopefully when the world gets back to what we used to know, maybe your patients will take vacation.
I love it. Vacation, yeah. Too.
I have become a huge fan of podcasts. Ever since Sarah Koenig hosted the first season of Serial, I was hooked. Now, creating this podcast has become part of my daily life. While it is an exciting new hobby, I also see it as a privilege that I get to interview so many DPC and direct care doctors. If you are interested in starting a podcast, let me tell you a little bit about Anchor. First of all, it's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast as well with no minimum listenership. It's basically everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
I want to ask about, with you describing how you have your Thursdays as your catch-up days and your Mondays as, you know, you're put out the fires from the weekend day, we can all relate to that for sure. How do you keep accountable over weeks and months? Do you have a way of schedule or something that you use to keep yourself on task?
For the practice, but also like clinically, right? So there's two aspects of that. So obviously there's, you know, maybe the business side. So I have everything, like, so I use a calendar a lot with reminders, and I have big to-do lists that I keep track of and review. You know, so I have a reminder on my calendar actually to look at my to-do list to make sure I hit everything that is needed. So I use Microsoft 365 a lot to help, in combination with my calendar and reminder system to help keep things straight and on target. And, you know, like you're saying, for things that are longer out, like, oh, so-and-so needs a blood test in 2 weeks. So I have a, you know, a tickler system for that. Like, oh yeah, so-and-so is due for their blood work.
I'd like to hear people's responses to that, because everyone has their own way of managing tasks, especially if they're a solo practitioner.
It is definitely a work in progress, and it still is. You know, you're constantly reviewing, or I am constantly reviewing how I'm doing something. Is there a better way to do it? Can I be more efficient? Because you have to kind of find out what works for you and for your practice. And you may start out one way and then all of a sudden realize, well, this isn't really working. Like, so my electronic health record had a tickler system, but it just didn't work for me. I don't know. It just didn't pop up right. I just didn't respond to it the way I needed to. So I altered things to find this technique of how I'm doing it. And I have Apple systems, and I'm not a huge fan of Microsoft based on past experiences, but I have to say the 365 product, which, you know, goes across different platforms. So it syncs up most of the time. Yesterday it was out for a little bit, so that was a little hairy, but we got through it. And that's, I think, the first time in the 5 years that I remember it really like being down. But it's a nice, it's also, they sign a BAA, so it's secure. So I put a lot of like little notes, and for me, it's a better way than what the electronic health record offers in terms of organizing kind of complex medical histories. I have a lot of patients who I would say have pretty complex medical histories and conditions that we're constantly kind of tweaking and following up on various things. So for me, kind of creating that different system really works for me to help organize those kinds of problems. So I think everybody just has to find what works for them for themselves. I use Evernote also as kind of an electronic filing system for all the business stuff. Now, it's not secure, but for like the business end of things, I find it very useful. I can put all my receipts in there. I can organize them. You can index them. My bookkeeper can access that file in Evernote. And so that's how, you know, we communicate, which has made it really easy and simple. So that's just yet another tool that I found very helpful.
Very cool. And thank you for sharing about Evernote. I know that speaking with different DPC doctors and even just seeing the tech that people have at conferences, Microsoft OneNote, Notability, Evernote, everyone, like you said, has what works for them. And so if people have not heard of Evernote, I definitely would say it's great that you mentioned it, just so they can check it out to see if it works for them.
It sometimes can be hard because it takes, you know, more effort. You know, it's kind of a little investment to figure it out. I wasn't all that, you know, thrilled when I first looked into it. And this was way before I started my own practice. But then all of a sudden, I realized like its potential and it, you know, what it can do. And I've never looked back. So, you know, I've gotten rid of kind of all my filing cabinets, and because everything goes in Evernote, like medical articles, you know, journal articles, recipes, all kinds of things.
That's awesome. With regards to experimentation, one of the things that I would love to hear your perspective on is overhead and keeping the overhead low, especially being a solo doctor.
I kind of was in the mindset that I needed, you know, to be, you know, stocked like I was going to be seeing 20 patients a day, you know, or however many patients. And then you start realizing, again, the nature of this kind of practice is so different. So I am much more conscientious about kind of that thinking about what I actually need on a day-to-day basis and what I need to keep stocked in the office to provide, you know, the basic care. I do keep some things, and other things I've kind of let go of when I really have never used them. You know, I still have strep tests, but I don't do mono tests in the office, for instance. I think I had one occasion in the 5 years to ever do a mono test, and I just ended up sending them to the lab. So So you kind of learn those things, you know, and pare down as much as you can. I went into this knowing that I really wanted to keep as low overhead and as part of just keeping things as simple and straightforward as possible. So, you know, that was my mindset. But even still, I overstocked initially. So that's kind of my one tidbit that I do tell people, you know, really look at what you absolutely need. And, you know, and I don't know, like most things you can get pretty quickly, either through Amazon or I use McKesson a lot, or there's, you know, a ton of other suppliers. And most of them get things to you very quickly. So typically you don't have a problem with that.
And that really goes back to your patients didn't follow you for, you know, the mono tests. Your patients followed you for your care and you as a doctor. So that's so
excellent point. Yes.
Important for people totally. To keep in mind. And the idea things are actually purchasable. It is amazing what you can find on eBay or reaching out to other doctors or online, you know, purchasing services or even Amazon for sure. You know, I just looking into little things like how much do alcohol swabs actually cost? They don't really cost that much.
And I, you know, the other tidbit for those starting out is look into joining the group purchasing organization, because that can really get you some good pricing on a lot of products. I use McKesson, but in part because they have a deal with the group purchasing organization that I have joined. And so you just get some rock bottom prices through that, which is awesome. Now, and also being able to offer, you know, lab pricing that way too, for the client billing or direct pay for your patients for the lab services, if they choose to go that route. The group purchasing organization can help with that. At least it did for me, because mine has contracted with Quest and I get quite low prices for that.
And that brings up a good point. You are geographically, you know, on the East Coast, around the Boston area. And if listeners are potentially near you or near you geographically, at least in the state or in surrounding states, I definitely, whenever I talk with someone who is just learning about DPC or wanting to make that jump soon, one of the things that I find myself talking to them about is reach out to those people who are geographically local to you. And a great way to find that is the DPC mapper or just, you know, a Google search. The DPC mapper is linked on the podcast page, but also found on DPC Frontier, where you can find other doctors who are practicing direct primary care. And that could definitely open doors to keeping that overhead low and keeping you with multiple tools in your bags as to how to get patients cheap laboratories or, you know, discounted imaging. So I highly encourage people to reach out to others because, you know, if you don't know necessarily which GPO to go through.
Yep. It's an organization called Direct Primary Care New England here.
Yep.
So, you know, I help organize that. And so we're all, you know, we're all connected and always sharing information. We get together a few times a year to try and help each other out and help newcomers and, you know, share those resources. So that's a great suggestion for people who are interested or, you know, thinking of starting or, you know, just starting out, definitely.
That said, if somebody is listening and would like to reach out to you, what is the best way?
They are welcome to call my office. They can email me. Those are probably the two best ways. So there's on my website, there's a, you know, a link, you know, where you can send an email that all the emails come to me. Again, no staff. So I respond to people that way, or they can call 617-918-7598. That's my office phone. Again, goes right to my cell phone and I will be the one getting it.
Next week, look forward to hearing from Dr. Amy Ostick of Health and Healing DPC. Until then, this is Marielle Conception. For more information on this episode and much more, please visit mydpcstory.com.